Good morning, church family. Spring break and spring forward on the clocks. Everybody awake? Are we ready to dive in to God's word? Say yes, and we'll just kind of go right to it. Are we ready? Amen. Are you awake? Everybody good? Hey, listen, we're in this sermon series that we have called hey, God, where are you, right? Where are you in chaos? Last Sunday, David talked about, hey, God, where are you in pain? And by the way, didn't David just knock a home run, knock it out of the park last Sunday? Amen. If you were here, welcome. Man, it was amazing. So today we're going to talk about, hey, God, where are you in disappointment? So I'm glad you're here. If you're joining us online, I'm glad that you are joining us online. Welcome. It is great to have you online as well. When we think about disappointment, I want to make sure everybody's awake. So how many of you have experienced disappointment in your life? Show of hands. Let me see. All right, that I thought we'd get close to 100%. I think it's more like 75%. The rest of y'all have lived a charmed life. I am so impressed. Stay behind after the service today and tell me about your life. Did you know for the 75% that just said, yeah, I've experienced disappointment, did you know there's actually a place called Disappointment Islands? Plural, islands. Did you know that's a real place? Yeah. It's the island of Topoto and the atoll of Napuku and a couple of others that are in this little, and it's in the Polynesian island chain. And it's very arid, inhospitable. About 500 native Polynesians live there at least part of the year on these islands, but they're called Disappointment Islands. Did you know how they got their name? John Byron, a British explorer in the 1700s, is sailing past with all of his ships exploring. He sees the islands. He stops because he wants to get some water, but the natives are very inhospitable, and he doesn't get water from the islands because they're inhospitable, right? And so he sails on, and as he's sailing on, he looks at those islands, and he says, I'm going to name those islands Disappointment Islands. And that's how they got their name. Any of you ever spent any time on Disappointment Island? Some of you are thinking, spent some time? I'm a long-term inhabitant of the island. It's other people that kind of, you know, make a visit and then after a week or two or a month or two or maybe even a year, and they move on, but I'm the one that just sticks around. I'll tell you, I've experienced disappointment in my life. You've experienced it in your life. Even the 25% that didn't raise your hand, you've experienced disappointment, right? I'm disappointed that I wasn't a professional athlete. I mean, I am. I'm disappointed in a lot of things. I'm disappointed in decisions I've made as a father, decisions I've made as a husband. I mean, we all, but you know, when I started thinking about, hey, what is a disappointment in my life that I've experienced? You know, instead of just going to last week or last month or last year even, my mind went back 43 years. Yeah, I know. It's a pretty big disappointment. Kim and I had been dating for a couple of years. And I had already spent a year in seminary. I felt called to the ministry. She felt called to the ministry. I mean, we were moving along in our relationship. She was at home on some break. And so I drove up to Sherman, Texas, because I felt like God was leading me to define the relationship. And I informed Kim of the new definition of our relationship. That, I mean, it was obviously of God, right? We are headed towards marriage. I was a little concerned because she wasn't like, oh, you know, I mean, just like, instead she was like, no. And I'm like, no. And she's like, no. And I'm like, no, seriously, what is going on, woman? Are you rebelling against God's will here? What is wrong with you, you know? And I'm telling you, I went up there to define the relationship as in, hey, we're getting married. And it's like, hey, we're not getting married. And I'm not going to say I cried like a baby, but I do know I drove away from Sherman, Texas, just crying. As she'll tell you that I broke up the relationship because it was like, now or never. And I'm like, she's lying. I was very gracious and patient and kind, and I begged, and she's like, no. Now, obviously, we got back together a few months later. We got engaged that December, married the next May. She had repented and come back to Jesus, and things worked out, okay? But I still remember the way I felt driving away from Sherman, Texas that day. And it was like my world was just crashing apart. I thought I'd live the rest of my days on Disappointment Island. And the reality is, you've been there. You know what it's like to spend time on Disappointment Island, where there's not enough provision and you just wanted some water, or where people around you are hostile and not very accommodating, not very kind. We've all spent time there. And so let's explore this question today. Hey God, where are you when I'm living my days on Disappointment Island? Where are you in my disappointment? We're going to look at the life of a guy named Joseph. Now, here's the thing about Joseph. I don't want to get into comparisons and don't want to try to, oh, here's yours, but yours is not as bad as Joseph's. But I'm just going to throw out something. I would suggest Joseph spent more time on Disappointment Island than any one of us in this room, at least more intense time on Disappointment Island. And if we'll look at Joseph's time on Disappointment Island, I believe we can learn some techniques they're like survival tools for Disappointment Island that will enable us not just to survive, but to actually thrive. And here's the thing, as I look at Joseph on Disappointment Island and I try to apply it to my life, and as your pastor try to apply it to your life, here's what God keeps bringing to mind. In your disappointment, cling to God's promises, and God will give you influence. God will see to it that you thrive. You don't just survive on Disappointment Island. Now let's look at this. Let's break it down. Here's Joseph in your disappointment. Joseph's disappointment started in a pit. How many of us can say that? Man, my disappointment was in a pit. My disappointment is that my future bride rebelled against God and turned me down when I'm basically asking her to marry me. And no, it didn't leave emotional scars that I still remember 43 years later. But at least that wasn't in a pit. Here's Joseph, right? He's 17 years old. He's lived a charmed life. How do I know he's lived a charmed life? Because he is daddy's golden boy. He can do no wrong in his father's eyes. His dad actually tells him that he is the favored child. I mean, what could go wrong in a family where parents have favorite kids, right? There's nothing that could go wrong with this story. Now, Israel loved Joseph more than any other of his sons. What? That didn't sound good, because he was the son of his old age and he made him a robe of many colors. So Joseph thinks life is good, right? He's rocking his Peter Millar coat with many colors. It's designed just for him by dear old dad. And he's just the apple of his dad's eyes. But I'm telling you, storm clouds were just kind of forming on the horizon, threatening to maroon Joseph on Disappointment Island. The storm clouds, his brothers hated his guts. You go, Gary, that's kind of strong language. I know, listen to this. But when his brothers saw that their father loved him more than all his brothers, they hated him and could not speak peacefully to him. Soon, Joseph was marooned on Disappointment Island. I mean, he is stuck on the island, thrown into a pit, and his brothers are standing around the pit that they threw Joseph into, and they are plotting his demise. And I can imagine Joseph going, guys, you threw me into a pit. You didn't bust my eardrums. You know I can still hear. And I don't really like what I hear y'all talk. Wait. Are you guys Googling the top 5 ways to dispose of a body? Are you kidding me? Guys, what are you doing? And now all of a sudden, his brothers are plotting his demise. Now, if we try to apply this to our life, hopefully people at your home are not plotting your demise and figuring out a way to dispose of the body. Let's just don't even go there, okay? But the truth is, every one of us knows what it's like to experience family strife, right? I mean, we all want that Instagram family where we're all smiling, we're all taking exotic trips together, we're wearing the designer clothes, we're eating the fine cuisine, right? We all want the Instagram family, but we all know what family strife is, right? And we all know what it's like to pray to God to fix our marriage or to fix our parents or to fix our rebellious child. We know what it's like to cry out to God, God, would you just get me off of disappointment island? And when we're praying that, we're thinking of home. Now notice, Joseph's time on Disappointment Island didn't end with a pit. You see, his brothers decided instead of killing him and disposing of the body and telling dear old dad, your son is gone, eaten by a wild animal, they decided, no, what we'll do is we'll sell him into slavery. And dear old Joseph ends up in Potiphar's house as a slave. Now nobody thinks in terms of, man, what I want to do with my life is to live it as a slave. It's horrendous. You talk about a disappointment. And I know it's not apples to apples, but here's the thing that I'm thinking about. Every one of us can relate at least in some way, some small way, to Joseph in the sense that, wait a minute, we know what it's like to be disappointed at the office. We know what it's like to maybe hit a glass ceiling or work at a job that is a dead-end job or to at least do that which we hate to do. Every one of us have had to, at one time or another, punch the clock on Disappointment Island and pray, God, would you just get me off of this island? But see, Joseph's time on Disappointment Island didn't just end with being a slave in Potiphar's house. No. Mrs. Potiphar had to get in on the deal. You see, Mrs. Potiphar believed in, let's just call it a non-traditional marriage. And Mrs. Potiphar invites Joseph to join her in this non-traditional arrangement. She invites Joseph to have an affair with her. And Joseph responds to Mrs. Potiphar, how then can I do this great wickedness and sin against Mr. Potiphar? No. And sin against God. Joseph is wanting to follow God like his dad Jacob and his granddad Isaac and his great-granddad Abraham. He's wanting to protect his integrity. He's wanting to protect his character. He's wanting to live uprightly before others in righteousness. And here is Miss Potiphar propositioning him, and he tells her no. And so she accuses Joseph of sexual assault. And just like that, he's labeled a sexual predator. And you and I know what it's like to have labels attached to us that wound and worm their way into our soul, leaving behind the emotional scars. For some of you, the label may be, oh, you're too lazy, or you're too fat, or you're too slow, or you're too short, or you're not smart enough, or you're unlovable, or you're not talented enough, or your house is not neat enough, or it is not decorated appropriately, or you're not a good friend, or maybe the label that someone slapped on you is you're not good enough, or maybe it's just that you're just not enough. How many moms hear that label echoing in their mind? You're not enough. When it comes to raising your kids and training your kids and entertaining your kids and inspiring your kids and praying over your kids and just really spiritually developing your kids, how many of us have heard you're not enough? See, we all know what it's like to have this label slapped on us that worms its way into our soul, leaving the emotional scars. And that's the kind of disappointment that leaves us crying out to God God, where are you in the midst of my disappointment? But let me give you one more. Because Joseph doesn't just get accused. Joseph actually ends up in prison. Listen again to the text. And Joseph's master took him and put him into the prison, the place where the king's prisoners were confined, and he was there in prison. You talk about disappointing. That's the very definition of disappointing, right? Now Joseph has a checkered past. Now he's a convict. Now he's got a rap sheet. Now he's a felon. Now he is labeled as a failure. And every one of us, if we were going to be honest, if we were going to be really transparent, we would have to acknowledge, you know, we've got stuff in our past where we feel like a failure, where we've got this checkered past and we don't want anyone to know about this thing in our past. For some of you, the failure is you failed in a business adventure, or maybe it's a failed marriage, or you failed to make the team, or you failed the drug test, or you were fired from your last job, or maybe it's a moral failure or an emotional breakdown. Most of us know what it's like to go from the pit to the prison, from favored child to being unfairly labeled and unjustly condemned. And when we go there, when we spend time there, we cry out to God, God, where are you in my disappointment? So let me turn it from in general to more specific. What about you this morning? What is your disappointment? Is the disappointment the way someone has sinned against you in the past? Or is the disappointment the way you just figure life has conspired against you? Or maybe some of you would say, you know, my disappointment is the opportunity I missed, or the investment that I didn't make, or the relationship that I walked out on, or the one that I let get away. Now, if we will allow him to, I believe God can teach us through Joseph's example how to thrive on Disappointment Island, no matter what the disappointment is. See, in your disappointment, cling to God's promises. See, if you look at Joseph, the thing that I notice about Joseph in the pit and in Potiphar's house and in the prison and then even in the palace, the thing that I notice about Joseph's life is he clung to this promise that God had given him. It had come in the form of a dream. Listen to this. Now, Joseph had a dream, and when he told it to his brothers, they hated him even more. He said to them, "Hear this dream that I have dreamed. Behold, we were binding sheaves in the field, and behold, my sheaf arose and stood upright, and behold, your sheaves gathered around and bowed down." Just what brothers who hate you want to hear. "To my sheaf." His brothers said to him, Are you indeed to reign over us? Are you indeed to rule over us?" So that they hated him even more for his dreams and his words. Bowed down, pretty heady stuff, right? Now we could dive into the text and talk about how Joseph really let this go to his head and it kind of puffed up his ego, but we don't have time to go into all that. So let me just say, yes, Joseph allowed this to puff up his ego, allowed it to cause him to be prideful for a season, but Joseph never let go of this dream because he believed this was a promise from God that no matter where he ended up, whether it was in a pit or Potiphar's house or a prison or a palace, that God would use him, that God would make him a person of influence. You see, he didn't believe that his brothers put him into the pit or into Potiphar's house. He didn't believe that Mrs. Potiphar put him into prison. He didn't believe that the cupbearer, whom we hadn't even talked about, put him into the palace. He believed God had placed him where God wanted to use him to be a person of influence. You want to survive Disappointment Island? Do what people of faith have done throughout the ages.
In Hebrews chapter 11, it just talks about even these nameless saints and how they survived their time on Disappointment Island. It says, some were tortured, refusing to accept release so that they might rise again to a better life. How's that for disappointing? I'm going to follow Jesus. Oh, great. Guess what's going to happen? I'm going to torture you if you're going to follow Jesus. That's disappointing. But they refused to recant of their faith in Jesus because they held on to this promise that God would raise them up one day to an even better life. Listen, others suffered mocking and flogging and chains and imprisonment. That's disappointing. I'm going to follow Jesus. Oh, if you follow Jesus, we're going to beat you. We're going to mock you. That's disappointing. They were stoned. They were sawn in two. That's disappointing, right? I'm going to follow Jesus. Oh, great. We've got a saw. We're going to cut you in half. That's very disappointing. They were killed with a sword. They went about in skins of sheep and goats and destitute, afflicted, mistreated. That's very disappointing. Of whom the world was not worthy, wandering about in deserts and mountains and in dens and caves of the earth. How did they survive? Verse 13 tells us, look at this. These all died in faith. The word faith is defined in verse 1. Faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen. Every one of these people we just read about, they held on. What to? They all died in faith, not having received the thing. Say this word with me. What is it? Promise. You see, Joseph had been promised that no matter where God plants you, he will use you. He will make you into a person of influence. And all of these other people, they believe, yes, if we follow God, even if we get sawn in two, God is going to use us to influence the people around us. And then God is going to raise us up to a better life. He will use us in this life, and he promises us a better life in the life to come. And they're going, good enough for me. I am going to hang on to the promises of God, even on Disappointment Island. And is that not what God did in Joseph's life? God gave Joseph enormous influence. He made him the number two power in all of Egypt. And God used Joseph literally to save millions of lives in Egypt from famine and starvation. Millions. And God used Joseph to save his family from famine and starvation. You see, my prayer for you and my prayer for me is that we will cling to God's promise and that God will make you and he'll make me into a person of influence, even when we spend time on Disappointment Island. So what am I inviting you to do this morning in response to this incredible example by this man named Joseph? Number one, I want to invite you, let me just get it out before you just like throw rotten eggs at me, okay? Because I don't want to be insensitive to time we spend on Disappointment Island, but I still want to invite you to move from rescue me to use me. I want to invite you to just consider this. What if you started praying fewer rescue me prayers and more use me prayers? Did Joseph want to be rescued from the pit? Absolutely. Did he want to be rescued from Potiphar's house serving there as a slave? Absolutely. Did he want to be rescued from prison? Absolutely. There were probably times he even wanted to be rescued from the palace. How many times did Joseph think, you know, I'd really like to just buy a little farm in Goshen and just kind of relax, kick back, retire? He probably wanted to be rescued even from the palace. But he didn't focus his energy and his prayers on rescue. Instead, he focused them on being used of God. And God used him in Potiphar's house, in the prison, and in the palace. What if you and I began to pray, Lord, would you give me influence right here on Disappointment Island? God, in the midst of my family's strife, would you give me influence? Would you use me as a peacemaker in my family? What am I inviting you to do? Move from rescue me to use me. Second, show grace. You go, Gary, where's that coming from? Human nature wants to find someone to blame for our disappointment. We want to identify the person who shipwrecked us onto Disappointment Island. We want to know who it is. We want to name them, and then we want to lash out. We want to blame them. We want to find a culprit. We want even to seek revenge. But here's the thing about Joseph. He showed grace even when he was placed in a position of power. Number two in Egypt. I mean, think about his brothers. His brothers are going, oh man, our goose is cooked. Dad's about to die and Joseph's gonna kill us. But Joseph gathers his brothers and here's what he says to his brothers. He says, what you meant for evil, God meant for good. In other words, guys, you didn't put me where I ended up. God did. You see, Joseph understood. It wasn't his brothers or Mrs. Potiphar or the cupbearer that kept him locked up on Disappointment Island. It was God who put him there so he could be a person of influence. Show grace. There's no indication in the text that Joseph sought revenge against Mr. and Mrs. Potiphar. Oh, I know I would have. I'd have paid him a visit, Mr. and Mrs. Potiphar. I got a little surprise for you. I'm thinking 20 years of hard labor busting rocks. That sounds good. No indication. He just showed grace. How could he do that? Because he clung to this promise. God had promised him, Joseph, if you'll just trust me, I'll make you into a person of influence. And then I'm going to raise you up someday to a life that is beyond your wildest dreams. There's a family in our church who's recently just walked through a prolonged stay on Disappointment Island. And they have done so with such amazing grace, clinging to the promises of God. And in doing so, God has given them incredible influence. And I've asked Ivy to just come and share with you just a snippet of their story. Listen to this.
So I'm the kids pastor here, so I have the great privilege of walking with families in our church through joyful, wonderful things and also times of disappointment. And the past 6 months, I've been able to walk with a family, the Wagner family. And Greg and Kristen are the parents, and Wyatt and Grace and Elizabeth are the kids. And back in October, Elizabeth got the label of cancer. That's a disappointment. And with that cancer label came extended hospital stays and pretty brutal chemotherapy and school via Zoom and holiday plans completely flipped upside down. Their whole world, the reality changed. Disappointment, wave after wave of disappointment. And yet I watched them as they went through these disappointing days cling to God's promise. Cling to it. On the day that Kristen and Greg found out this diagnosis, Elizabeth was back in surgery, and they are sitting in the waiting room, and I'm there sitting with them, and there's other parents that are walking through similar disappointments in the room with us, and they're just talking about, we don't know. We don't know what this means. We don't know what our future holds. We just, all of the questions. Their life has completely turned upside down. And they're processing this with me sitting there, and then immediately in the same sentence, but we know, God knows. God has a plan. We know he's gonna provide. We know he's gonna take care of us. I remember in that conversation, they looked, will you make sure, will you remind us of this? Will you keep reminding us of this? Clinging to God's promises. A few weeks later, I get a text from Kristen, and it's one night, and she says, hey, do you think you could talk to Elizabeth on the phone? Because she's just having a hard night. And I said, sure. So call her up. We're on the phone, and she's fourth grade, beautiful hair. And she said, Ivy, I'm just feeling really sad tonight because my hair is coming out in clumps. And it's just really hard to look at myself in the mirror, and it just feels really scary, and it's uncomfortable for me. And I'm like, I can understand that, absolutely. I said, how are you feeling? She said, well, I really feel like I want to trust that while I feel really uncomfortable, God promised that he's going to give me peace. She said that. And she said, and I know that, you know, my hair is a part of me, but God says I'm valuable no matter what happens to my hair. It's what he's promised me. She said that. In the midst of the disappointment, I watched them cling to God's promises, and it works. It worked. And then talk about this. You cling to God's promises and you ask him to use you in the midst of it. Ask him to use you to have influence in your disappointment. I watched that happen too. I went to visit them during their hospital stays when she's hooked up and getting chemo and, you know, nurses are coming in and the doctor's coming in. And I watched this thing happen where the Wagners are encouraging these nurses. The Wagners are a light to these nurses and doctors who desperately need it. I watched that family have influence over that place, that hospital. They had influence. A couple weeks ago, a crowd of people gathered in that same hospital that Elizabeth had received her treatments and had her surgeries. And crowd of people, the nurses, the doctors, her teachers, some neighbors, I mean, were crowded around. And Elizabeth gets to ring this bell that she is cancer free. Yes. And I know, look how. And all of us are weeping. We're all weeping. And I look around and I realize we aren't just celebrating the fact that she is cancer-free. But we are celebrating the fact that we got to see God through the Wagners. The Wagners ask God, use me. Use me. If we walk through this disappointment, use me for your good. And that happened. I talked to Kristen a few days ago just to make sure it was okay for me to share her story. I don't like to share people's stories without their permission. I asked, and she said, yes. This is the whole thing. If we walk through this, my prayer is that God would use our story to point more people toward him. It works. It matters. That it worked for Joseph thousands of years ago. It worked for the Wagners, and it works for you. I can't possibly know what disappointment you're walking through. But what I know is true. I've seen it with my eyes. I've experienced it myself. That when you cling to God's promises and you ask him to use you in the midst of it, it changes everything. It works. This morning, you know, we've thrown a lot at you. And if you're sitting in a disappointment and you're feeling really overwhelmed by that, one thing that helps is talking to somebody. Talking to someone, talking it through, having them pray for you. And we've created space for that for you. As you leave in that glass little room, you can stop right there, and we are there to talk to you, pray with you. We would love to do that for you. I mean, if you're sitting in this room and you're like, you know what, I just showed up. I don't really even know what God's promises are. I don't know much about God. This is a safe place for your questions. It is. In fact, we have something on Wednesday nights called Alpha, and it is a place where you can come with your questions about God and Jesus and what this whole thing is, and it's a great spot for you. Another thing about kind of going further with this message, we release this podcast every week that's kind of goes deeper into the message, and you can submit questions. If you have questions about something that Gary said, something about this whole idea, you can text those questions to 45859 and they'll address those in the podcast. All right, before we leave today, I would love to pray over you. So let's pray. God, you see us. You see us. And you know there are people sitting in this room that are experiencing great disappointment. You know all the details about it. And I'm asking right now that you would rain down your promises. You would put your promises in their minds. That you have plans that are good for us. You will provide, you will care, you will provide peace, you will give comfort, you will make a way. You have the ability to make all things good, God. You will never leave us. And God, I ask that as people sit in here, sitting in the midst of their disappointment, may they hear your promise. May they cling to your promises. And God, I ask that you would give us eyes to see that you are at work in the middle of the disappointment. That by your power and your authority, you will work through us for good. Help us to be used for your glory, God. Help us to be people who influence others for your good, God. I ask that you would give us opportunities and eyes to see. God, we thank you for this morning. We thank you for your truth. And I ask all of these things in your name. Amen. All right, y'all have a great week. We'll see you next week.